Welcome to Fusion Relay FM's member-only show. My name is Stephen Hackett, and this month, we're on a bit of a journey together. So right now, it is Monday, June 5th. I'm sitting in Airbnb with Mike Hurley and David Sparks. The keynote was just a couple of hours ago, and we're just going to kind of talk through the event a little bit. It's going to be real informal. So Mike, what was the biggest thing for you?
Do you really have to ask that question?
It's probably the iPad, right?
No, I'm so excited about... No, it was the iPad.
The iPad?
It sounds so stupid. Like, so we're a few hours post the keynote, right? And it almost feels like it's not true or right in a way, because it's everything that I wanted.
Right.
Like, it's two devices, which I wanted, because I was worried that they're only going to do one. The 10.5-inch looks exactly like the iPad that I'm looking for right now. And then all of the software stuff. But it's even more than that. Like, I never would have imagined. I think the thing that keeps breaking my brain is that there is a dock.
Yeah. It does things.
There is a dock like on the iPad.
The Mac.
So this is the thing.
Or next step.
So me and Jason just recorded Upgrade. And I think the thing that we both feel, and like the way I'm coming from this, is there are a bunch of things on this which I can see someone saying, oh, it's just, they're just making the iPad like the Mac.
Sure.
But I think what it is Apple have distilled some of the key tasks that a computer can do and has made them into the iPad, right? So having file management, having window management, and creating an iPad version of those concepts.
Sure.
As opposed to just taking the Mac and putting it onto the iOS.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. That's... it's the same ideas and a lot of the same workflows, but sort of engineered for a world that you're just touching a sheet of glass.
Yeah, and it's really exciting to me. I cannot wait to start playing around with it.
Well, David Sparks is playing around with it. he got it on an iPad.
Yeah, just installed it as we started recording. So,
and this is it's obviously early days, but I mean, Mike's flicking through it, and you've got drag and drop and all sorts of crazy stuff. I know you're a big iPad user as well. I remember last year you had some real issues with the iCloud Drive stuff. Do you think what they're showing with files is going to be enough to make that part of your workflow easier?
Yeah, I mean, the way I use an iPad is I work with a lot of files. I mean, I think a lot of people do that. And you know, my day job, I'm a lawyer, so I get documents and spreadsheets and things all the time. And a huge problem for iPad for me from the beginning, frankly, has been every time I need to save five files off an email, I have to go and drill through Dropbox five times.
One by one by one.
Yeah. And so it seems basic, but this change is a significant improvement. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think with the Mac, any desktop OS really, and Windows as well, the files are sort of the ground level, right? Yeah. Everything is based on that. And with iOS, it was app first, and now they've offered this different way. I mean, we're watching the keynote this morning, and they said, you know, it's a great way to manage email attachments. And you were like, there's a way to now manage email attachments. It's not like, finally a great way, finally a way, period.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But that's not just email. It's just managing files across platform. I mean, it's funny, for the longest time, I think Apple had this idea that the Finder is bad, and that with iOS, we can do something better, something simpler. And what they did was they made it simple for people that have very basic needs.
Sure.
But anybody trying to do real work, they actually made it infinitely harder, where you had to learn some kind of scripting language or some nutty thing just to move a lot of files. So by making the system a little bit more complex, they've actually made it a lot easier for people that want to get some significant work done on the iPad. So I'm very excited about it. I just downloaded it on one of my iPads, and I'm looking forward to digging in on it.
Yeah, I feel like the trade-off with iOS and the iPad in particular has always been, you know, adding complexity, but they don't want to make things too complicated, or they want to make it complex in a way that normal people won't ever run into it, like kind of hide it away in the corner.
Yeah.
And this is very upfront. I mean, the home screen has a dock on it, very in your face of what this device now can do.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I think, you know, it's funny because leading up to this, there was a lot of speculation that we were going to get a lot of iPad features. And, like, I feel like, you know, it's like I have that what's the syndrome, you know, when you're a captive and you...
Stockholm syndrome.
I don't know, I'm not sure it was Stockholm syndrome, but I just didn't want even to admit to myself that, you know...
There's a problem.
No. Just the opposite, that there's a solution.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I felt like I don't want to get invested in the idea that they're going to fix this, because if I do and tomorrow they don't, I was going to be super disappointed.
Yeah.
So I kind of like just stood off, and then I was very pleasantly surprised that they did it. And it, they kind of punked us today because they went through all of the iOS 11 stuff and then they moved on to other things.
And they circled back around.
Yeah. And I was sitting there going, are you kidding me again?
Yeah.
Again, you know, and then they came back. So it's great.
Yeah. I like the way they framed it. The keynote, the order was a little bit different, but yeah, they talked about iOS 11, which by itself, I mean, there's some new stuff, but it's a little bit of a quieter release on the whole until you look at the iPad, right? That's clear where all the effort went this year.
Yeah, and that, I think, is appropriate. If you think about it, the iPhone operating system is pretty mature, and a lot of the big features we want are there. But these kind of power user, file management, multitasking features that we need so desperately on the iPad are finally here, hopefully.
Agreed.
Like, one of the things that's interesting, Mike was talking about how it's like the Mac. They have a Spaces feature, and we've had that on the Mac now for several years.
Yeah, since Leopard or Snow Leopard, somewhere in there.
Yeah, and it's nice on the Mac, but a lot of people don't use it. I can already tell you this is going to be way more useful on iPads.
I think so.
So you can have a space where you say Safari and email, and they're side by side, and that's a space. And then you can have a separate space, which is maybe OmniFocus and your Ulysses editor or whatever. And it remembers that. So you can swipe up from the bottom and jump between these different workspaces, all with gesture-based actions, which is going to make the iPad feel pretty mind-blowing. In fact, as I'm saying this, I'm looking at Mike Hurley, and he's making noises or gestures with his head like his mind is blown.
Yeah.
As he plays with my iPad.
Yeah, it's. I'm looking forward to digging in and seeing what's in there.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm with Jason Snell, who got some hands-on time with the HomePod.
Ears on. You can't touch the HomePod.
So your ear didn't touch it?
My ear didn't touch it, but the waves, sound waves from the HomePod reached my ears.
Tickled your ears.
They did.
So how was it?
It was an unusual circumstance. You know, a bunch of people got to sort of wander past the HomePod pasture and listen to the HomePod at WWDC.
There's roaming the
I'm bells. Asked not to characterize it as anything other than that I heard it. So where did I hear it? It's a mystery. I'll leave that to the listener. And near it were Sonos Play 3 and an Amazon Echo.
Like a head-to-head combat.
Yeah. So... You know, look, the Amazon Echo, I have one. It's not a surprise. It doesn't sound very good. Its appeal is in the voice control
stuff.
And the Sonos Play 3 doesn't have voice control, but it's a pretty good speaker. I have a Play 5, which is a lot more expensive. That is really, really good. The Play 3 is pretty good.
Yeah.
And then the HomePod, which is... it's interesting. They're doing a lot of stuff. Like it's technically a mono speaker, even though it's got like 7 tweeters and a woofer.
They're not separate left and right channels.
Yeah, they're not, and they're not trying to. I thought maybe that stereo wise they might actually try to fire. Well, if with those tweeters you could fire the left and the right separately if you wanted to, and then just have the low frequency be combined. You could do that, but they don't seem to be doing that. Then again, it's 6 months before this thing has to ship, right? So I don't know how Siri works on it because I didn't see that. Nobody saw that. Nobody touched it. But we did get to hear the music on it. And it's doing a lot of that processing stuff. I think it gives some music fans pause because what they're really trying to do is make it sound great in a space. But they are doing that by separating parts of the audio and firing them to different speakers and creating... Not like a fake surround experience, but it's a little bit like that. It's not an unmolested, like totally flat experience. They are trying to pull the treble out and put it here, and throw the highlights on the back, bounce it off the back wall, and have other stuff coming right out the front at you. And that's all really clever. And in most cases, the music I heard, it sounded way better. I also heard a stereo pair where there's two of them, and that sounded great and had the nice stereo effect. They did a live recording, and the audience sounds were in stereo, and the music was really clear, and it sounded really great, which it should, because with two of these, that's $700.
Yeah.
But I will say that they played Superstition by Stevie Wonder, which is a very kind of like produced and has a lot of synthetic kind of like synths and jangly sounds in it. And I actually thought that sounded better on the Play 3 because I felt like that was a case where Apple's processing of the audio to throw it to different speakers in different places and, you know, pump up the bass and lift up the treble so it's clearer. It was clearer, but it also didn't sound like the song anymore because I think part of this, that the vibe of that song is that kind of super smushed together feel. And I was thinking about that listening to the All Songs Considered podcast about the Sgt. Pepper remaster, and Giles Martin talked about that, about how their mono mix was actually had more punch because it was all kind of like in one place. And I was thinking about that because that was what happened with Superstition, is that Apple kind of programmatically spread out the frequencies, and I think it kind of lost something. So again, 6 months, they're doing that in software, so they've got 6 months to tweak this stuff.
Because the thing has an A8 processor in it, right? Like, it's not just a dumb speaker. This thing is doing work.
Yeah, it's doing a lot of work. I mean, they're doing a lot of audio processing on the fly. Plus, it will do your voice commands eventually, which we didn't get to see. I've heard a lot of people complain about Siri. They're like, oh, well, but the Amazon Echo is so much better at voice commands. It's so much better a voice assistant than Siri. It's like, I'm not sure I believe that. It's more extensible because they've got all their little add-ons, but the Echo has lots of microphones in it. And I think that our experience with Siri on phones and iPads, you know, that's not... We'll see. I think that the HomePod will be much better at Siri than your iPhone is.
It is interesting that there's no Siri kit. That had been rumored. We talked about it. But it's really kind of like Siri was, I guess, you know, 2 years ago, where it's all Apple stuff. It's stuff that Apple feeds Siri. There's no, you're not talking to any third-party stuff at this point.
Yeah, that was, I mean, Siri's way in the background on this product, which surprised a lot of us who had framed it as a Siri
speaker.
More,
I think the way I phrased it is much more Sonos than Alexa, at least at this point. It has that stuff, but it seems like even on their webpage, you got to scroll down a ways before you get to, oh, there's Siri here, too.
It's in some ways, it's marketing 101. They are marketing this as a product that solves a problem, and the problem is make easy access to good-sounding music in your home based on a large music library of streaming music.
Yeah.
And that's how they're pitching this product is. This is a room-filling speaker full of Apple Music that, yes, you can control by voice or app or whatever.
Right.
But that's, like, not the point of it. And... that may be smart to market it that way because they think there's a hole in the market there and that it's something that they can appeal to with a product that costs what this product does.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing it in December.
Yes, we could all hear it then, and maybe we'll even hear Siri between now and then in that product. That's it's going to be that one of those like the Apple Watch and the iPhone. Even it's like a rolling thunder kind of rollout here where they've got time to drop new hints and new features and new demos and. As they go, because the product's not going to even be done for a while.
All right, so I'm with everyone's favorite underscore David Smith, and I was curious what you thought about the Watch OS updates this year. Seems like a little quieter than previous years.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think... We certainly didn't get anything nearly on the scale of last year, where it was like a total re-architecting of the experience and changing, you know, getting rid of glances and introducing the dock. And there's a lot of sort of fundamental changes into the way that watchOS 3 apps would behave. This year it was a bit more additive. Like, we have a variety of improvements to things that you can do. Like, there are things that you can now do for example, with location tracking. You can now do, like, sort of turn-by-turn navigation applications and things like that. You have better sort of integration with swim tracking type of things. You can now programmatically, for example, put on the water lock. But I'd say certainly overall, like, watchOS is, there's less sort of big marquee changes. Though there is actually one that was, it's not an external change at all. They've, in watchOS 4, they're actually fundamentally, they're combining the process architecture for applications. So when watchOS was first existed, back when it was actually WatchKit, the program of your app and the UI of your app, the interface, would live in separate places. One of them was actually running on your phone, and the other was on your... on the watch itself, and then they subsequently combined them so that in watchOS 2 they are both on the watch, but they were actually still running separately. They were just talking to each other locally, and then now in watchOS 4 they're fully integrated, which apps don't need to be recompiled or rebuilt or changed in any way. But in similarly to the way that from watchOS 2 to watchOS 3, I think a lot of people felt there's this tangible speed and performance improvement,
right,
even on existing hardware. WatchOS 4 is actually probably going to have a similar type of improvement just by sort of unifying everything now into one process. And so there's just that little bit less latency, that little bit less overhead, and things should launch a little faster and so on. So that's a more of a minor change. Like, it's very low level and technical, but, you know, watchOS should definitely feel better in watchOS 4 than it did in watchOS 3.
And watchOS and the watch itself have definitely become more fitness oriented over time.
Yes.
Right? They sort of backed away from this is an app platform. It's still all there. You can still goof around in the honeycomb if you want. But is there anything new on that front this year?
I think the biggest changes on the health tracking side is around providing third-party integration with the workout route tracking capabilities. So in watchOS 3, you could track, like in the activity app, you could get a little sweet little map of your run or your cycle or your swim. And that data is now available to third parties. So, you know, like I expect to use that to, you know, create some sweet, sweet maps of, you know, past runs and things like that. And then also to be able to incorporate into workouts that I generate, I can now add mapping data and location information to
That's
them
cool.
and put that back into HealthKit. So other apps could read it out, or just in general, it's nice to have parity there so that, you know, third-party workout apps can now basically do everything that the built-in workout apps can do.
Okay. Yeah, so it's kind of exposing more stuff to outside apps.
Yeah.
It feels like to me that this is the first time they've had to refine the watchOS. Like every year is like, oh, we're into WatchKit, oh, we're gonna do native apps, oh, we're going to like drastically re-architect the whole thing and get rid of glances and do the dock. I mean, does this feel like to you, okay, we kind of know what this is now, and now it's a matter of just moving forward from here as opposed to any more big right or left turns?
Yeah, I mean, I think they seem to have a pretty good sense of what they want the watch to be, at least for now. You know, watchOS, if you're a watchOS 4 user, it's just going to feel like watchOS 3 a bit better.
Yeah.
Whereas last year, it was like, whoa, what's this?
Yeah, this is drastically different.
This is a totally different thing. I mean, it was a big improvement, and I don't think anybody who used, you know, watchOS 2 would have been sad to go to watchOS 3 because things were so much more responsive and so much better. But this year, it's just like, they won't have quite that same impact on you. And certainly, you know, it seems like they've definitely coalesced around health and fitness as the main show. You know, there's all these things, you know, they still have like sort of a pretty comprehensive gaming APIs suite for watches, but it doesn't seem like that's something that anybody uses.
Yeah, no one should use that.
And so, but like their emphasis, and I think in terms of, if not in their messaging, but just in what they're providing and the new and the interesting things, like the action is around health and fitness tracking on the watch, and that seems like that makes sense.
Yeah, and listeners can't see this, but you are wearing two Apple Watches.
Yeah, I am indeed. I will be wearing two Apple Watches probably for the entire summer.
Yeah, so you and everyone else got a busy summer of development and tuning up and new ideas just waiting for you when you get home.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I mean, it is kind of funny having two watches, one with watchOS 3, one with watchOS 4, and you know, it's a busy summer, and at some points I must confess I'll probably end up wearing like three or four watches.
That's a good look.
Like when I'm doing sleep tracking testing, especially because it's hard to collect. It's tricky to collect data that takes like 8 hours to
get. It's an 8 hour test time.
Yeah. So in order for me to do like sort of parallelized testing, I'll end up wearing like three or four watches. Yeah. Or when I go for a run, I'll like start the run on all four watches and then go for a run.
Well, as a user of your apps, I'm glad you put in the hard work.
Oh, that's fun.
Thanks, man.
Yep.
So I'm sitting here with Casey Liss.
Hi, how are you?
And you are a programmer by trade.
I am.
You write some sort of numbers and letters that become apps. That's
and
how it works.
And occasionally emoji, yes.
So, did emoji go into code? I don't even know.
Yeah,
so,
you can. With Swift, anyway.
So there's some Xcode updates that you, out of everyone I've talked to, are the only one who understands.
Fair enough.
So what's going on with Xcode?
So the actual editor in Xcode has been redone, and I believe is written in Swift, if I'm not mistaken. And it's been redone from the ground up. It's super duper fast, which is occasionally useful.
Yeah, I saw a demo. They were scrolling, and people were cheering. Was scrolling difficult before?
Well, it's not that scrolling was difficult. And generally speaking, it's considered a code smell if you have a file that's like more than 1,000 lines. And so them scrolling a like 50,000 line file, the only reason I would ever open that something that big is either auto-generated code that I shouldn't be looking at or touching anyway, or a log file. And I probably wouldn't be using Xcode for that anyway. But the thing that's interesting about it is not only is it redone, it supports Markdown even better than it used to, if I think it used to. But anyways, and interestingly, there is refactoring in Swift, which is super exciting. So that's if you have a variable named, I don't know, Steven, and you wanted to change it to a variable named Mike, then...
It's a terrible choice.
It's a terrible choice, for sure. But that what this allows you to do is make the change once, and it'll automatically propagate throughout your entire project, including into Objective-C, because, you know, they can intermingle.
Right.
And so that's really powerful and something that we've been waiting for a long time. So it's really, really some great changes to Xcode just in the editor alone. And if you think about it, you know, if a podcaster spends all their day, not literally, of course, but effectively spends all their day in Logic, imagine, right, like, the whatever the play field, for lack of a better term, obviously I don't use Logic, but you know that the waveform field in Logic, imagine that being redone and way better. So that's kind
that'd
of
be
an
great
equivalent.
Actually can we, right, can we make that happen?
Exactly. So that's like the equivalent for us, and so it's a pretty exciting update. I haven't tried it yet, but I have downloaded it, I haven't installed it, so I'm really looking
forward
to it.
This seems like a risky beta to install.
Well, you can put two versions of Xcode side by side, so it's not that risky, but it's still slightly scary, especially when it forces a version upgrade, which I don't think this one does, of Swift. So if this forced me to use Swift 4, that might get ugly quick.
Right.
But typically they'll go back a version or two with Swift, and it should be okay.
Yeah. And the Mac notebooks got updated. I know you've been waiting on a MacBook 12-inch Retina MacBook.
So that's right.
Did you order one?
I did.
Did you get it in space gray, the one true color?
The one true color.
Yes.
And it will live in the one true time zone. And I had it ordered before we recorded the ATP live show, which was 5 o'clock local time, the evening of the keynote. So it was ordered almost immediately. I'm already having, I wouldn't say... What's it? Purchase regret? There's a term for that.
Like buyer's remorse.
Thank you. Buyer's remorse. I'm slightly having buyer's remorse because I saw a single tweet that said that the Core i5 and Core i7 that are in the MacBook are not actually the fancy pants processors that they claim to be. That they're just rebadged.
They're rebadged Core M, which is what was in there before. They're faster than what was before, but they're still Core M.
All right. See, I haven't even had the time to look into this, so I'm glad we had a chance to talk.
And they did also read just today, because the reviews are out today.
Oh, are
today
they?
Today is in real time, Wednesday the 7th. Mm-hmm. And the keyboards in it are now the keyboard from the MacBook Pro.
Right.
So it's a little bit better than what was there before. Still not my favorite keyboard.
Sure.
They sound, I like the way they sound. Not everybody in my household appreciates how loud they are.
Right. No, but, I mean, I love the Magic keyboard. And
too.
I know that they're not
it's
identical. Oh, it's absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, my favorite keyboard ever. And this isn't the same, but it's a lot closer to the Magic keyboard.
Yeah, it's saying that direction.
It's a lot closer to the Magic Keyboard than
Federico
what was,
just walked in.
Hey, Federico.
We don't have to hide it.
Ciao, Federico. So it's a lot closer to the Magic Keyboard than my comparatively mushy 15-inch non-touch bar, like the 2015 edition MacBook Pro.
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to it. I should get it in a couple weeks, and I'm super duper pumped.
Cool. Thanks for hanging out.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
So, Federico, your platform of choice saw, I think what everyone would say, is the most attention this week.
Yeah. I was really happy to see, like, that we basically went 2 years without any major iPad improvements in terms of the software. We were basically unchanged since iOS 9. And this week felt like an explosion of changes, like, everything all at once. So I was really happy to see that.
Yeah, so... We have multitasking, we have drag and drop, we have a lot of things where those two features kind of work together, the new dock. It seems like you're happy with it.
I'm very happy with it. I mean, I'm sure there will be some minor problems this summer, like some decisions that I will be like, I'm not really sure about that. But overall, it's such an amazing change to the iPad, and the idea of we're no longer sort of building on top of the iPhone interface were ready to take the iPad in an opposite direction that is kind of a mix of a Mac and what the iPad has always been. So all the changes taken together and the fact that they actually depend on each other, like the dock is connected to the new multitasking view and to drag and drop, because you can bring up apps and slide them over to the side, and you can have even more than two apps at once. You can have three apps on devices with 4 gigs of RAM. So it feels like there's a lot of these changes are all connected to each other, and it feels like Apple has really taken the past 2 years to think this through. Like, it doesn't feel like it was rushed. It does seem like it's the kind of change that a company has been thinking about and building for over a year, really, almost two.
Yeah, because it's not true windowing like you have on Windows or Mac OS. It is still iOS-like, in my opinion, but it's just taking it further.
Yeah, especially when building on top of the previous slide-over metaphor and sort of taking a slightly different direction of... Now the slide over is more of a floating panel, and you can dismiss it sort of like a picture-in-picture app instead of a video. And it kind of feels like windowing, but it doesn't really have all the baggage of Windows on the Mac. There's no resizing controls. There's no semaphore in the window. It's this little panel that you take and that you can slide to the side. It seems to me like Apple is trying not to... I saw some people saying the future of the iPad is what the Mac has always been.
Right.
And to an extent, maybe that is true, but it also, I think it's important to note that they're trying to take what worked on the Mac and reimagine it for touch and for iOS.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that they're taking the concepts from the Mac, right? Mm-hmm. The concept of multitasking, the concept of spaces or virtual desktops, and... They're taking the ideas behind them, but they're refactoring them in a way that is touch friendly.
Yeah, even if you look at drag and drop, the way that the content is visualized on screen, and sort of the intelligent system that Apple has built. I was taking a look at a demo the other day of a photo from the Photos app dragged into Maps. Normally, that wouldn't make sense because you don't load photos into Maps. But the drag-and-drop system that Apple has, it can intelligently extract the information that it needs. And so that photo from the Photos app, drag-and-drop extracted the location. And so the photo, once dropped into a map, became a pin for the original location of the photo.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was really...
That's pretty cool.
That was really wild. So it's this idea of... taking ideas that are decades old, really, and reimagining them, making them easier, making them more visual, more secure, maybe even to an extent. I think that that's what Apple should do, and I'm happy that they're doing that with the iPad this year.
Yeah. The iPad also saw hardware, the new 10.5-inch and then the 12.9. They are now the same specs, right? It's just you pick the size.
Yeah.
Do you think that 10.5 is a big enough screen... like the increase from the 9.7 to make a difference, or do you think it's just kind of a nice change but not necessarily game changing?
I don't think if you've been working on the 12.9, I don't think the 10.5 will be enough for you. Especially because the split view is basically the same of the 9.7. It's a little more spacious, it's a little more... I mean, the screen is amazing compared to the 9.7, but if you tend to work on the big iPad Pro, you're probably going to struggle to adapt to the 10.5. And that is why I see this iPad as an upgrade for existing users of the 9.7, people who really like the compact iPad form factor. This is a better, smaller iPad, but I don't see it as a replacement for the 12.9, which explains why there's also an update with a new display technology in the bigger form factor. I don't think it can replace the big iPad if you're that type of user.
Yeah. So you have a busy summer ahead of you,
I guess.
You're going to work on iOS review?
Yes, 11 review. It's going to take a while, especially to understand all the iPad changes, to sort of see how they, like in practice, how they work, which is why I think I should probably take a few weeks, not even research, just to do my normal work and to see how iOS 11 affects the way that I manage Mac stories and club Mac stories. Before doing any research, I mean, before doing any writing, I need to take my time to use it in practice in everyday life.
Yeah, I mean, it almost seems like as big as iOS 9 was,
yeah,
this does seem like there's more change even than maybe that brought.
Yeah, just so many metaphors are now different. The way that you, like the way that you used to move files and data between apps with extensions, I believe that will not be as popular anymore, and it'll take some adjustment. You know, especially in terms of muscle memory. I put 11 on my iPad, and I'm still doing the thing where I swipe from the side to rig up multitasking. That doesn't work anymore because now it's all in the dock, really.
Right.
And it's gonna take a while to sort of have this new structure and understand how now things can be done differently in a better way, because I'm so used to an inferior solution that now even if I have something that is wildly better, it's gonna take weeks to get familiar with it.
Well, Godspeed. So I'm with John Voorhees, who writes with Federico at Mac Stories. John, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So we're now at the end of WWDC.
Yes.
It's Friday in real time.
Yes.
What is your biggest takeaway when thinking about how this keynote will affect the world of apps?
It's going to require a lot of people to update to support things like drag and drop. There weren't a lot of cutting-edge new features that are going to create a lot of new apps, but I think it's going to require a lot of people to just retrofit their apps to kind of make them modern and fit in with iOS 11.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like obviously the iPad is the big winner there.
Right.
The iPhone is sort of, it's getting some of the stuff, it's getting Apple Pay, and it's getting some of these other things, but the real heart of the action was on the tablet.
Yes, that's right.
Do you think that something like drag and drop could open up new types of apps down the road, or do you think this is really just a sort of a maintenance and tune-up year?
I think it enhances apps more than anything else. There may be some that it could. I can't think off the top of my head of particularly new apps that could be developed from this, but I think it'll enhance existing apps. It'll be great for anybody who has a document-based app, you know, whether you're dealing with photos or text files or URLs or anything like that. You can easily move things between apps and process them in a number of places.
What do you think about the addition of the Files app?
It's nice. I haven't tried it yet, so I don't know specifically what I think of it in terms of usability, but I do like the fact that it's integrated. It's kind of brought together a lot of disparate pieces of the OS into one place. So you've got, you know, things like document providers and iCloud Drive and all that kind of consolidated in one place, which is nice.
Rest in peace, document picker.
Exactly.
Thanks, John.
Sure.